The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. Like Wei Shihao's malicious tackle, we're here to be condemned by the Global Times and write some half-hearted self-apologies in the hope that we won't have to play again for Fabio Cannavaro anytime soon. I'm your host, Steve Crooks, to look back on what has been a fairly brutal week in Chinese football, and I'm joined by our regular experts, Brandon Chemers from Beijing. Brandon, how are you holding up?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
I can't wait to see how you try and put a positive spin on this week. And for the less positive take, we have our regular Scotsman in the house, Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. Cam, how are you doing?
I'm feeling better after your witty intro with Steve. Thanks very much.
We do try to please, and we do try to provide some distractions from the depressing goings-on both on and off the field, but there's only one place to start here. I think we have to do our regular kind of bi-monthly, why exactly is the national team so bad, and is this a new low section? Brandon, I'm going to come to you first. You're normally Mr. Optimism when it comes to matters around the CFA and the national team, but the China Cup didn't really go to plan, did it? 1-0 defeats to Thailand and Uzbekistan. Is this in a way even more embarrassing than those kind of shellackings by mid-ranking European teams last year?
Yes. I don't know what was wrong. You know, this was the sort of thing that the way it was set up was basically, okay, so last year it didn't work out right. So this year they'd start out against Thailand, and then, you know, they'd have the big final, hopefully against Suarez and Cavani, although they didn't travel, but Uruguay brought a decent enough side, and it would be an exciting match and everything, and under the lights in Nanning instead of afternoon kickoff. And yeah, they lost to Thailand. It was pretty pretty unbelievable. I wasn't able to watch the Uzbekistan match because I was at work, but I did unfortunately see the Thailand match, and it just, the team was uninspired, the team was completely missing something, and it was pretty bad overall.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many more ways we can spin the side isn't good, and the statistics really don't back them up. Kind of following on, Cam, from what Brandon said there, do you think it's motivation that was lacking for them this time around? Do you think that they were as underwhelmed by the new coach or the interim coach as we were when he was announced?
I honestly don't know. I'm really at a loss to know what to say about a situation which we've seen repeat time and time again. I saw a clip being circulated on WeChat. It was a long distance video of the players doing the warm up, doing the exercise where they kicked the ball around between themselves in a circle, and they were kind of like messing it up. We've seen this as well, but I think a couple of months ago in the Asian Cup, there was a Chinese players not taking warm-up seriously type video being sent about. But actually, I don't think it's that they're not taking it seriously. I actually wonder if it's just nerves, and that they're on the pitch, the crowd is watching them, they're practicing, and they're kind of getting little things wrong, like, you know, not being able to string three passes together in a training exercise. I think the nerves is part of it. And we've seen the general climate in Chinese football now is very much, there's so much pressure on the team to perform. That's a problem if you don't have good performers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've spoken, I think, before as well about that point that you raise, you know, whether it is just the weight of that shirt and that expectation on their shoulders, because these are players who we see do good things for their clubs week in, week out for the most part. I mean, it feels like we're always pointing the finger at different players in the game, but we do need to really highlight where the key problems are once again, I suppose. Brandon, we weren't really keen on Cannavaro, whether it's an interim or a longer term appointment. How much of the blame do you think he should get, and how much of the blame is he getting, or do people take a step back and look at the broader problems that the national side has?
I obviously, I wrote a long post about my dislike of the decision to put Cannavaro in charge. But this is where I'm supposed to say something really smart about, who should have been picked over the players that were picked, or what Cannavaro should have done versus what he did. And you know, I just throw up my hands and I have nothing to say. You know, it's Cannavaro. There was nothing that you could really say that he did wrong managerially, that he really screwed up or anything. It's just the situation is, I just think that I don't know if he is the guy that they need to, you know, to motivate the team to deal with the CFA, to force the CFA's hands in getting the players he wants. There's a lot of factors involved that I'm not sure going forward if Cannavaro is the right guy, but for this competition, I don't think it's necessarily his fault. It's pretty harsh to blame it on him, but at the same time, two losses in his first two matches is going to really stand out. And I'd be surprised at how patient the CFA is in giving him time to find his footing, I guess, with the national team.
Yeah, I have a pet theory that Cannavaro is a little bit of a scapegoat, you know, a sacrificial smokescreen, really, to draw criticism as a lightning rod, really, and distract from the fact that, you know, there aren't players out there who weren't called up by him. The squad is what it is. They've been on this downward trend for some time now. There are more structural reasons behind that. Am I drinking too much of the conspiracy Kool-Aid here, Cam? Or you know, do you think that this and then some of the outrage around Wei Shahao, which we're going to get onto as well, is a kind of a deliberate attempt to focus on these kind of small details so that people don't start asking the bigger questions?
It's not a theory you could dismiss out of hand. I think you're absolutely right. The problems are structural and systematic. I think it's overwhelmingly obvious that the problems are systematic, because it's very clear, looking at the progress in the national team over the last 10, 20 years, that regardless of who the players are, regardless of who the manager is, regardless of the policies, regardless of how well the CSL is doing, the end result is the same. And that points to that it's not really the players or the coaches, it's the system which is broken. And I think that theory would meet with a lot of approval if you went around and asked people inside the game in China.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting point. We do get, you know, a balance, I think, in the pod between sharing some detailed analysis for people who follow the game here in detail and giving a bit of an overview for people who maybe aren't so familiar. And it seems like we're often trying to describe, okay, you know, people outside of China who see some of these bold headlines about, you know, a World Cup capable team by 2050, and they see all the money being thrown in, and then they're a bit surprised that China aren't kind of already qualifying for the World Cup. It's not just that we need to explain why they're not that good anymore, Brandon, but do we need to explain why they're going backwards?
I struggle with that question, because if you want to look at why they're quote-unquote going backwards, a lot of that is due to the factors that, it's nothing that's going on today. It's going back and looking 20 years ago or 10, 15 years ago. If you look back 20 years ago, it's right in that. That, I mean, 15 years ago, we're sort of just coming off the Black Whistle scandal and everything, and there's a lot of negativity around Chinese football. And so I think that it's sort of, I'm hopeful for the future. I'm hopeful that after the school football program, after, you know, all these efforts to get more kids playing the game, and some at some decent levels, kids going abroad and everything, we're going to start seeing things improve in the next 5-10 years. But I do think we're sort of at sort of the, if you look at the youth coming up, or the guys in their 20s or so, their mid-20s, were right at that time when Chinese football was at its lowest epoch. And I think that's sort of a factor here.
Yeah, in a way there are, you know, potentially no quick fixes. One quick fix that people do always try to come up with is the idea of changing a coach. We've got quite a long but interesting question on Twitter from John Halber here. So, Cam, I'm going to come to you with this one. Do you think a Chinese national coach could bring any improvement? Someone who knows the language and the culture should be beneficial in some ways, right? Or do we think that years of relying on foreign coaches has, quote-unquote, destroyed Chinese talent in this regard? I mean, I'm not a huge fan of pointing the finger at kind of foreigners, obviously, but do you think that in this world of increasing kind of, you know, going with the native first approach, we'll see a push for a Chinese coach to come in? Because, I mean, if Lippi couldn't do anything with them, then a relative newcomer like Cannavaro hasn't got a hope.
It's a good question. I think in theory, there's a lot of logic in having a Chinese coach the Chinese team. However, we all know that the Chinese football's problems are very deep-rooted, and in general, there's a lack of football expertise on a wide scale here. And we've had Chinese coaches before. We've had Gong Hongbo most recently, who actually did all right to an extent, but in the end, he didn't really do any better than anyone else. Which the Shandong coach has been in the frame recently, touted as a potential future manager of the national side, but I just don't see, like the answer I gave a few moments ago, I don't think it's really the coach and the manager who needs to change. It's the systems which develop the environment from which the coaches and managers emerge.
I do think that the manager, a Chinese manager, could be beneficial. You know, you have a number of relatively young managers in League One, in the CSL, Li Xiaopeng and Li Tie, and, you know, League One also Fu Bo. There's some decent Chinese managers, people that have put a lot of effort in. I honestly don't think they want the job. I wouldn't leave. I mean, Li Xiaopeng, I talked up a lot, but I wouldn't leave Shandong right now to go to the national team. He was already thrown into a really difficult situation previously with the women's team. So I don't know if that's sort of the right move for him, but I do think that, you know, I think if you look at Gao Hongbo, what he got out of the team, and yeah, we've talked a lot about Gao Hongbo tactically being maybe not the best, but he really got something out of the side in a way that Lippi, in a way that Camacho, in a way that Perrin never were able to get out of the team. And so I think that there is something to be said for having the right Chinese manager in the position.
Although equally a better foreign manager than some of the names they've had, you know, Lippi excluded, perhaps, could be someone to go to as well. I want to come back, Cam, to a point that you made earlier when you mentioned the kind of nerves, because a comparison that we and other, you know, pundits have drawn in the past is it does to a degree feel a little bit like watching England in the bad old kind of pre-Southgate days, where you know how good these players can be for their clubs, but they don't do it for the national team. A lot of it is the pressure. You can talk about, you know, foreign players in the league and whether they're hurting chances or whatnot, but you still have a squad of players who could be doing better. One of the big problems that existed, and you see it in lots of national teams globally actually, is this idea of cliques within the squad and club rivalries and so on. And do you think that's an area that maybe deserves a bit more attention being paid to it, that you have this large number of Evergrande and Shanghai International Port Group players, and, you know, maybe there's some issues getting them to gel when they're kind of huge domestic rivals 11 months of the year?
Cliques are found everywhere in football, not just China, but I think there's more emphasis put on personal relationship compared with other places, generally speaking. I don't really know exactly what happens in a national squad. I know on club sides, cliques are very influential in certain clubs at certain times. It would be logical to think that perhaps could be the case in the national team, but I don't know. I do think that we've talked a lot about Evergrande and their kind of stockpiling of national players. I think the jury's out on exactly what was behind Evergrande's transfer strategy, but I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence entirely that Cannavaro was the coach of Ten Hag before, then he was Evergrande coach, then he's at the same time China coach, and then there's a big swathe of players from Evergrande, then there's the younger players, the under-23 guys going to Ten Hag. It seems to be that there is, in some level, directive or policy of trying to concentrate the national players in certain teams. And again, this is just evidence of the systematic problems where there's policies coming out of the system which I think on one level maybe look sensible, but if you look at all other successful football countries, they just don't do this. So it's just kind of football with Chinese characteristics at the end of the day.
Yeah, that Soviet-style sporting monolith that you've kind of railed against before. I mean, absolutely. I don't think we can put this part of the discussion off much longer. You mentioned their Cam Evergrande players. I suppose, Brandon, we need to talk about the other smokescreen, kind of Wei Shahao, and I don't know, a guy who made, yes, a bad tackle, but I mean, he's being hung out to dry and kind of martyred at this point, isn't he?
It's ludicrous, but, you know, Evergrande has a policy in place. They're very firm on it from the start of the year and even going back into previous last season. And they have to, I mean, he did what he did and sort of embarrassed the national team. And I think even more so than anything, he was relatively contrite in his post-match statements. And I think that factored into things as well. And so Evergrande sort of, they backed themselves into a corner. And yeah, they've suspended him now for at least a month due to a pretty bad tackle that resulted in injury to the Uzbek player.
In some ways, it's an example of the pressure which players face. Not only are they all the normal pressures which face players who are underachieving at national level, as you said a few moments ago, Steve, about England, it's a good example of players who undoubtedly were talented, but for whatever reason, they couldn't really deliver on a national stage. So you've got this pressure already, but add in Chinese football this massive thick layer of political nonsense. I mean, Brandon's right, actually. Evergrande are being consistent. They're being consistently absurd. I mean, what is more absurd than punishing your player for what he did with the national team? And it's one thing if he did something completely outrageous. It's another if it's just a tackle which he didn't even get sent off for. I mean, what planet are these people on? I mean, we're sitting here trying to have a discussion about what's wrong with Chinese football. I mean, you can't suspend somebody for your club because of something because they got had a bad tackle in a national team game. What kind of logic's that? It's just bananas, man. What more do you need to say? I mean, you just need to look at that. And this is, of course, it's not an isolated incident, but just look at that. It's just bonkers. That's all you can say about it.
Yeah, I think that's quite a nice summary of the situation, actually. We can't really apply logic where it doesn't exist. One last question on the China Cup that we received before we move on. Brandon, I'll come to you with this one. This is from Harry Bell on Twitter. Wants us to talk about the abject failure of the China Cup, not mincing his words here. Not just the performance of the national team, but the failure to attract decent teams from overseas. Admittedly, Europe and Africa have had qualifiers. And the failure to garner any excitement from anyone. Does the introduction in Europe of the Nations League spell the end of this? The crowds haven't been great. I think this is a really interesting question because I also want to just understand, you know, what is the point of the China Cup and do we think they're going to go ahead with it? Who are they going to invite next year? And why on earth is it held in Nanning?
Why it's held in Nanning? I'll start with that. And the simple answer is, I don't know. I'm guessing Wanda, you know, it, like everything in Chinese football, Wanda has some business arrangements or something, or the Nanning government bid more than anyone else to hold the tournament, and so that's why they're holding it. Outside of that, they have in previous years been able to attract fairly decent sides. They've done, I think, the first two years, I'd be fairly impressed with the competition they brought over. They don't want to necessarily, I would imagine, you know, the whole point of the tournament was to up China's FIFA ranking. And so they don't want to bring over absolute patsies in theory. They want to have sort of, I mean, sides that China has the potential to maybe beat, but that are still relatively decent, relatively well respected. I think this year Thailand was sort of moving towards the patsy direction, but still a relatively up and coming side. But things didn't work out the way China would have liked, obviously. So I'm not sure that, you know, this is the third year they played in Nanning. Oftentimes these things are 3-year agreements. So maybe next year it's moved somewhere else. But I don't think attracting sides has been the problem. I think the biggest problem is China's success against those sides. You know, this is their own invitational tournament, and they finished no higher than third.
I also think it doesn't help that they scheduled the third place playoff game in the middle of the afternoon on a working day. We've seen this in the ACL and sometimes in the CSL, and most of the time we really don't have a clue why this is, but in the case of an international game, it's especially puzzling, as it just doesn't seem to be necessary to schedule it then. They could have played the following night. It's still a official international date on the calendar, or they could have done a 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. kickoff if for some reason they had to play on the same day. But it's just silly, and it's kind of a bit of hubris that China arranged to play Thailand, a country who they comfortably beat just 2 months ago in the Asian Cup in the semi. But they obviously didn't think they were going to have to play in third place playoff, but they did, and the crowd was pitifully small, and it's just a pretty sad end to a sad competition.
The CFA can't even rig their own tournament at this point. That's where we're at. Well, we're going to move on from the China Cup. There are some more varied and actual positive topics for us to look at in the second half of the show, but it's time for a regular little pause and our Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
Now, we didn't have a Phenomenon of the Week last week. We had a poll on predictions for which team would go furthest in the Champions League. Shanghai International Port Group, the listeners' favourite there, followed by Guangzhou and Beijing, fairly close for second. Shandong lagging a long way behind, which I think is a little harsh when you look at the kind of home and away games they've got against the Malaysian side next, but we shall see how they do. This time around, the China Cup and beyond has given us a lot of potential teams, players and phenomena to nominate. Interesting to see what comes up. Brandon, I'm going to come to you for the first nomination.
All right. So, I mean, it has to be done. I'm giving it to Wei Shihao's gift of a wheelchair and fruit basket to the player he injured.
it brings a new meaning to the phrase basket case.
It's brilliant. You just need some salt to rub in the wound on the wheelchair. It's perfect, isn't it? That's a good one. That's going to be difficult to top. Cam, what have you got?
On a related nomination, I'm going to nominate the Global Times for describing Wei Shihao's behaviour as evil. It's kind of like evil. Evil. I just think it's really funny. It's so melodramatic and just phenomenal.
Well, we love a bit of moralising here. I'm going to have a slight China Cup related one in my nomination. I think it's been a great week for former Soviet republics, ending in Stan with a big win for Uzbekistan and a couple of other standout results as well. So those are your phenomena of the week. I didn't mention anything by name. And we're going to move
to
some
to do that.
Slightly... Well, I'm wary of the fact that you said the next person who mentioned it by name had to buy you a beer, and I am from Yorkshire, so I'm not doing
well,
that.
Well, actually, the phenomenal thing was actually, just if I digress, just to share something funny with the pod, was that Sky Sports actually lost the signal at one point, and it said, "We apologise for the loss of pictures," so you can insert your own joke in there for the Scotland fans.
I do think, given where we come from and the club sides that a lot of us support back home as well, we have that gallows humour that's required for what we do here with Chinese football a lot of the time. But as I said, there are some positives to look forward to, and while it's been a horrible week for the senior side, the under-23s have come up with some very high-scoring qualification wins. You're Mr. Positive, right, Brandon? Is the Olympic team where it's at? Are they already the priority, do you think, when we look at qualification for the next year?
No. Honestly, I'd like to be more excited about the results, but they came against Laos and the Philippines, and I would imagine that even the national team under Cannavaro, even without Ule and Zhang Yuning, would still be able to produce victories at the very least against these two sides. You know, there's another match where we're recording on Tuesday. There's another match tonight against Malaysia. But yeah, there's no reason to be too, I mean, China's already through, and there's no reason to be too excited about these results. I think the next round is when we start to see how good this side really is.
And whether they can deal with the pressure as well. Cam, a couple of questions have come in from both David Oliveira and regular kind of listener Seb on whether we expect to see some of these players get more playing time with their clubs. It's certainly something that Gus Hiddink, the coach, has requested. And with these regulations, you know, in place to promote younger players playing, do you think we're going to see more of the national side playing? Do you think we're going to see more of a nudge to get them playing as well?
I think Hiddink's words are just going to be taken by the CFA as proof that their policy is right. And the push will continue to get more of the younger guys playing. It'll be interesting to see if the topic of not enough Chinese strikers or hardly any Chinese strikers getting a game. Maybe Dong Xuexiang at Hebei is an exception, but I don't think he's a very good player. But yeah, I think it's interesting that Hiddink said that, and I'm sure that with his influence that it will probably add to the pressure to get these guys on the pitch.
Yeah, we've seen that they're not averse to kind of getting a bit of interference with teams and changing the rules mid-season if they need to as well. I mean, speaking of which, it's time to look forward to the return of club football and the CSL and rule changes ahoy. Another question that we've had from Will Scott here, Brandon. What is the update on naturalized players? Are we finally going to get to see them?
You know, it does appear that way. Everything, again, we're dealing with a CFA that hasn't even announced their national team manager or what the exact situation is with Cannavaro. So it's always hard to say about these things. But according to the reports that have been filtering out into the media, Guan will be able to use both Yanaris and Hoseider this weekend in the Beijing Derby. I've also seen things out of Shanghai saying that that they can use their naturalized player. As to how they'll be able to use them, that's still uncertain. But for Guan, that they should be able to just count as local Chinese without a problem.
Actually, I read something on Xinlang News today that they quoted the situation of a Indonesian under 23 player who was naturalized Indonesian but originally was Dutch and played for the Dutch under 18s. He lost his under 23 qualifications because FIFA basically cancelled him because he'd previously represented another country at youth level, albeit not the same level. And the report actually said, will this affect Ho Yongyong or Hoseter, to quote his English name, because he's actually played for Norway under Norway youth level. So I don't know. The thing is, no one actually knows what the situation is, and we'll only know for sure when we see these guys actually play on the pitch. So right now the situation's still pretty confusing, and before I saw that report I was also thinking, yeah, I guess these guys are going to appear, but it seems there's still some confusion over it.
Well, but even with that, I think the issue is more, will they be able to represent China as U23 players with the national team? And then in theory, if they won't be able to, then will they be treated the same way as the Shenhua player for the years until they turn 23 or if they turn 24, and then they can represent China at the national team level? So really odd, but
that's exactly what the report went on to say. Yeah,
simple question, complicated answer. That's what we do here on the pod. Let's have a look at some of those games that we have to look forward to in club football then. And it's a relatively interesting fixture card, actually. I suppose the standout fixture, Brandon, has to be the Beijing Derby. This is, of course, a chance for Guan to go out and get revenge after that kind of surprising 3-0, was it, that that Renhe won by last year? What's the mood in the city ahead of this one? And is the stadium going to be green, despite it being a tentative home tie?
It's only necessarily revenge for at Feng Tai, because Guan crushed Renhe at Gongti. But yes, there is some need for revenge. It will definitely be a very green stadium. I don't think it's going to be a sellout. I think there's still tickets available, but there are definitely far less tickets available than usual. it will be pretty close to a sellout. I know me and a number of green cohorts were very quickly snapping up tickets when they went on sale this week. And there are a number of price ranges that have been sold out, which is unusual for Renhua. I'm optimistic. I was optimistic last year as well, though, but I don't see how Guan, especially with hopefully with Yanaris and Hoseider, can lose this, even though Bakambu might not be back in time. Lile was injured with the national team. Zhang Xijue was out with a fever or a quote-unquote fever. Who knows? But I think it should be fairly easy for Guan.
Watch this space. I feel it would be remiss of me not to point out the little joke about turtles and snapping that you kind of brought up there as well. So moving on from such trivial matters, another big game is actually, it's too early in the season to say it's a relegation six-pointer, but Henan Shenhua has an interesting ring to it, Cam. And Shenhua have suffered a couple of potentially big injuries to forwards over the international break. Well, where are their goals going to be coming from in this game?
Good question. Shenhua are really up shit creek because Liu Rofan and Xu Haoyang, two of the under-23 players, are out injured. So there's actually people asking if players who are under-23 players are injured whilst on international duty, do the rules where you're allowed to field one less under-23 player if they're on international duty, do those actually apply if the players are not available because of an injury they got playing for the under-23 side? So it's just another of these complicated, convoluted things we have to think about before we can work out who's going to be on the pitch and how many players of a certain age or whatever. And Igalo is out. We're going to see Shenhua's faithful Qingdao contingent probably all get a run out again. And frankly, these guys are just crap. And I don't think that we can see Shenhua do very much in this game. And I think there's only two games we've played. I think there's not much point to talk about relegation.
And I'm sure that's something that lots of listeners enjoy talking about. But from your preview there, I guess it's a Zhu Zhenrong hat trick coming up. Please do not take the pod as betting advice, any listeners out there. A couple of other interesting games that I wanted to touch on briefly that kind of feature two of the CFA's preferred teams, so to speak, if the rumours are to be believed. Cannavaro's month, Brandon, it could go from really bad to absolutely horrendous here, right? He signed off from club duty with a defeat in the Champions League. He's had a China Cup to forget, and then Evergrande have a very testing trip to Dalian to kind of kick off the weekend's fixture card. Do you anticipate them slipping up here, or is he finally going to get 3 points after what's been a really torrid run as a coach?
Yeah, I think he'll get a little bit of validation in this one. Dalian hasn't been very good so far. They do have 2 points, but they've struggled. They've especially struggled defensively. I don't think the break was enough to really fix the issues they're having. And I think Evergrande, even without Wei Shihao and with the issues from the national team, will be able to get through this one.
I wonder if that's some reverse psychology in your predictions going on there. And then Tianhai as well, another side who've had a very tough start. Do you think that the CFA's other pet project's going to do any better this week, Cam? And how big a blow do you think Pato leaving is going to be? I mean, and do we have any clarity on exactly what's happened there? Is it mutually agreed? Did he pay out his contract? There's been some confusing and kind of contradictory information that I've read on this.
He has paid out his contract, according to the reports I saw. Although I did see some quite interesting little anecdote, which said there was once tension between him and his Chinese teammates about a year ago when he held up a portrait of a rather attractive Chinese actress or singer, I'm not sure which, who he had a personal admiration for. I'm not sure if anyone remembers that. It was about a year ago. But anyway, trying to get back to the football. It's not easy, but it's another case of Chuan Jin doing what they did last year, where they lost Witzel after the window closed and therefore weren't able to replace him. But I get the feeling that the direction Chuan Jin's going in is they don't want to replace Pato with another foreigner. So that's quite convenient for the alleged under 23 development team in the CSL.
And nothing makes a development team like playing turgid football and getting beaten every week. I mean, I know that he's the chosen one and a very popular man in kind of political circles. But at what point, Brendan, do you think that Shen Xiangfu starts to come under some serious threat of losing his job? I mean, if they lose their first five, if they lose their first 10, are they going to get a proper manager in at some point?
Well, I'm not so sure about those statements about Shen Xiangfu, the former Guan legend. I'm always very sensitive about that. I think that he should be okay. Again, very unlucky last week against Shenzhen, or whenever the last time they played against Shenzhen. I think Shandong will not make things easy, but I think after that he'll have a little easier road, and as long as they're not in the relegation picture after 10 or so matches, he'll be okay.
I would be surprised if Cannavaro stepped aside, if Shen Xiangfu took over the national team, man, going at this rate. It just nothing would surprise me right now.
Yeah, we should do at some point a poll of just write-ins for the next China manager, because we've got some creative listeners out there. It'd be very fun to see who they'd come up with, and
it'd be more
probably
creative.
Would make more sense than anyone.
It'd be more creative than Shen Xiangfu, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he did okay in the 90s or whatever, but he's not a man who's had a good past decade or so in football management, we have to say. But I'm glad that bringing up that topic did finally bring out the positivity in Brendan again, and that gives us a good place, I think, to wrap up on this week. We did have a number of other interesting questions, particularly looking at some of the stuff that we've been posting on Twitter today around the, you know, how to build a club and fan engagement from Shenzhen and the Citigroup investment in China League 2 as well. But we want to do those topics justice, so we'll come back to them next time we have a really extended international break, of which there are plenty this season. So hopefully we have sated your curiosity, listeners, for just why the national team did so badly in the China Cup and given you a couple of things to look forward to in the club weekend. Brendan, best of luck with the derby and those tickets that you've snapped up.
Thanks, Steve. Hopefully 3 points.
And Cam, hopefully Xinhua don't need to wheel some under-23s on in wheelchairs, although I know a man who can provide them.
Yeah, I know some Xinhua players who could probably move faster in a wheelchair as well. So that's great. Happy days.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Thank you, guys. And thank you, listeners, for the veritable plethora of questions we got this week. Always great to go through them. Look forward to more questions for next week as well. We will be back. But for this week, this has been your Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. And I've been your host, Steve Crooks. Thank you for listening.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。